Chapter 19. Wandering Worm. The year of the Wandering Worm, Dale Reckoning 1317, had been a fine one for Jarl Axel and his band, and now these early months of 1318 were promising more of the same, or even better. Bregan de Aerth was now fully integrated not only into House Beanry's designs, but also among many of the other matrons who sat on the ruling council. Even though his business dealings with the dwarf Neblin of Blingdenstone had not worked out as he had anticipated, King Schnicktick would not sell Arandir to him for any reasonable price. House Hunsrin had not recovered from the events those years before, and that blow was more than worth its weight in the ore. Priestess Duquelve had not been anointed as a high priestess, and probably never would, and Jarl Axel was glad of that, because she was an adventurous one, who wanted still to turn her eyes outside Menzo Berenzon. Even if there was no such place as Enclave Arrak, the entire construct a ruse by a pair of mischievous yokel. Duquelve had protested and was no doubt still protesting that she had acted on behest of a pair of handmaidens. That's what had kept her from complete ruin. Except it was clear that she had not known, or if she did, didn't quite understand the full extent of their purpose, seeing how it could lead only to disaster. In any case, Duquelve had been humbled, and Jarl Axel doubted she would ever recover. And more importantly to him, House Hunsrin had been put back in their place, fully so. Yes, things were well with Bregan de Aerth, and Jarl Axel was now plotting a time of quiet for the group. Building the secret extra Menzo Berenzon networks he could use to fully exploit the relative goodwill being offered him and his band. It helped that the city too was fairly quiet, at least as far as the continual backroom whispers typically went. It made sense. The most unruly drow house of any real consequence at this time was Doerden, and with her prized son at the academy, even anxious Malice wouldn't be so quick to start trouble. Of course, with that insatiable priestess, anything was possible. That thought brought a smile to Jarl Axel's face as he entered the Uzi Myconid that night. The place was bustling, so Jarl Axel went straight for the bar and was met with looks from Dabne and Harbendare. He couldn't quite make out their expressions. As one, they motioned to him with their chins, and when he followed their lead, the smile left Jarl Axel's face, replaced by a slack-jawed look of shock, something not very common with this one. For there, across the tavern, sat Zacnafane. Jarl Axel composed himself and looked back to Dabne, holding up two fingers. When she nodded, the rogue turned back to his old friend, composed himself once again, and walked over. "Well, well, the weapon master returns," Jarl Axel greeted him. Zack didn't look up, staring off the other way.
"I hope one of the two you ordered was for me," he said.
"It is, if you'll allow me to join you."
"The irony of your words," replied the man who had been kicked out of Bregan de Aerth.
Jarl Axel took a seat. "So many years," he said. "How long has it been, my friend? Half a decade?"
"More. I've been busy."
"Training your progeny, no doubt. They're already whispering of his excellence at the academy."
"He could defeat half the masters there," Zacnafane said matter-of-factly. "I've seen you fight. I don't doubt it."
Dabne came over then and set the mugs down in front of the two. She patted Zack on the shoulder as she walked away, not saying a thing, and it was pretty obvious to Jarl Axel that she and Zack had already exchanged words. "What brings you here?"
"Am I not welcome?" Zack asked.
"More than welcome, of course. You drink free for as long as I own the place." Finally, Zack turned to look at Jarl Axel directly.
"I am good enough to sit at your table, yet not enough to serve in your band then."
"That was a long time ago."
"So I'm redeemed," came the response.
And how Jarl Axel had missed that sarcasm. Few Lothian drow would dare, since satire could be purposely misconstrued as heretical words. After generations of living in such anxiety, few drow in Menzo Berenzon could even comprehend or play that word game now. Fewer still could play it well,
and only Zacnaphane had ever challenged Jarlaxle's supremacy in the art of true, ironic needling. "I am sitting with you here in a tavern everyone knows, but no one admits that I own," Jarlaxle replied. "That is a start, yes?" Zack lifted his mug and toast to that thought.
"I could use a distraction," the weapon master admitted.
"Would you settle for information?"
"Then the answer is no."
"You destroyed a handmaiden," Jarlaxle bluntly replied. "You knew who it was when you finished the killing."
"Or I would have been killed by the handmaiden."
"If that was its judgment, then," Jarlaxle let his voice trail off there.
"You shrug," Zack chortled. "Would Jarlaxle have surrendered to the whims of a yokel demon? Had it been you in that corridor, the handmaiden would have been obliterated. What then, Jarlaxle? Would you have relinquished control of Bregendyerth and accepted whatever may come your way?"
"My charm is more considerable than you remember, I see," said the rogue, and he painted on a rakish smile. "I would have convinced the handmaiden otherwise."
"Stop it," Zack demanded.
Jarlaxle held up his hands, a silent apology for his making light of the damning situation. It was Zack, after all, and not Jarlaxle, who was paying for the issue in the tunnels. "I will see what I can find out," Jarlaxle promised. "Nothing would please me more than to unwind the events of that day, at least as far as your situation is concerned. So I will look to the abyss. Perhaps time has healed this wound, or at least has mitigated the angry fires."
"Or maybe your Inquisition will fan those flames to new life," Zack replied.
"I will be clever." Zack lifted his mug and toast again, a helpless and resigned movement.
"To cleverness."
"And other information," Jarlaxle said, leaning in. "I have eyes in Melee Mac there. As I said, your son is doing well. His skills have already been noticed."
"He is doing well," Zack replied, "which means that he is accepting their indoctrination. That's how they do it. They dig a hole and coax you in until all light is left far behind. Lie by lie, deed by deed, you dig your own soulless grave."
"You escaped it."
"Did I? I sit here, an unwilling pawn, but a pawn nonetheless."
"If I could give you a priestess to kill, I would," Jarlaxle said. Zack snapped his gaze up at Jarlaxle, then laughed with the joking rogue despite himself. He lifted his mug yet again, this time with some enthusiasm and more than a little gratitude.
Clever Jarlaxle had joked exactly the right way in that moment to break through Zack's dark clouds.
"We will adventure together again," Jarlaxle promised, with as much conviction as he could manage. He didn't really believe it, though, and could tell that Zack didn't either. Both of them had to at least pretend they believed it, though. Without that, they had nothing.
"Is this all to slake your lust?" Dabney asked Zacnaphane, as she lay in his arms one night many months later. Ever since Zack's visit to the Oozing Myconid, he and Dabney had resumed their affair, even while Zack had seen Jarlaxle only once or twice, and never with more than a passing word.
"My matron is Malice D'Urden," he replied, stating the obvious.
"Perhaps you grew bored with only one partner."
"For all of her many shortcomings, Matron Malice is hardly boring in matters carnal," Zack replied. "Why would you think my trysts with her involve only one partner?"
Dabney gave a helpless laugh. "Her reputation precedes her, indeed."
"Her reputation isn't half the truth of that one."
"But still," Dabney said, growing serious, "why are you here? What are we doing here?"
"Perhaps I'm just trying to get back in the graces of Lolf, so I can rejoin Bregendyerth," Zack replied. "And perhaps Dabney simply cannot resist me."
The woman was already rolling her eyes before Zack confirmed the joke with his second sentence.
"I mean it," she said. "We're here. And yes, I want to be here, and this is no complaint. But why? Why am I here? The risk to me is..." She paused, shaking her head.
is what? Are you afraid that you will fall from the graces of the Spider Queen by sleeping with the man who defeated a handmaiden?
Do not admit it, Dabney scolded, pulling back from Zack's embrace. Do not ever admit it, to me or to anyone else.
Zack pulled his arm off her and rolled onto his back, staring up at the few glowworms Dabney kept in her bedroom. They wriggled and snaked along the ceiling, almost as if they were trying to form some letters or words or answers.
Zack laughed at the mere thought of that, considering that the answer to the great dilemma of Lolth might be found in the simplest of life forms. Perhaps simplicity was indeed the antidote to the tangled webs of that ultimate witch.
I don't see it as a risk, Dabney said quietly, evenly.
She too rolled onto her back and offered a heavy sigh.
There is no favor to risk, although I am still confused as to why I am granted divine spells without the favor of Lolth.
Maybe because you serve her.
Dabney rolled up onto her side quickly, scowling at him.
Would you even know if you were?
Zack asked.
Do any of us truly?
She is the Lady of Chaos.
Who more than Jarlaxle creates chaos among the children of Lolth?
Dabney's scowl melted as she considered the words.
I find that possibility even worse somehow.
Because it is a trap without an exit.
Another sigh escaped the woman.
You still haven't answered my first question. Why are you here?
Why would you even need to ask?
You don't love me, Zack Nefane. You cannot. In fact, in some place deep in your heart, I know that you must abhor me.
The war between our families was a lifetime and more ago, Zack answered.
And neither of us precipitated it anyway, and only did what we had to do to survive, as is the way for almost everyone in this fallen place.
Not the war, Dabney said. How could you possibly love me when I am a priestess of she you most reject and despise? A priestess, for all of my failings, I gave my oath to Lolth.
Zack shrugged, playing those words around in his thoughts. He couldn't deny the literal truth of them, but those facts meant nothing to him. He imagined a fight between Bregan de Earth and House Doerden that would lead him into a chamber where Dabney cast her spells. He remembered his assault on House de Vere. But no, he could never attack this one. She was a priestess of Lolth, but she wasn't, not really, not in her heart and not in his.
We are here because we're safe here. Because we understand each other. Maybe even better than we understand ourselves, Zack said.
A horde of Dryders could burst through that door and kill both heretics at the same time, Dabney answered. Safe?
Emotionally, Zack said.
He rolled onto his side to face her directly and brought one hand up to gently stroke her soft cheek.
We are here because this is where we don't need to lie.
About
everything. Maybe when we're here, when we're working with Jarlaxle's crew, we have found a refuge from our own lives, which are nothing more than lies.
Zack welcomed the intensity on Dabney's face as he said that. She was hearing his every word. This was important to her as it was to him.
That's how they do it, isn't it?
He asked.
Do what?
Bring us into their webs. Bring you into the clergy of a goddess who is not in your heart.
Dabney's lips moved a bit as she was trying to formulate a response, but she just shook her head, a signal to Zack to go on. He was extemporizing here, mentally improvising. This was no long thought-out theory coming from him now. Certainly it was a subject he had often considered, but suddenly there was clarity.
They speak a lie, and even though we don't believe them, they speak a line of hate. Against the elves above, or the deep gnomes, or another drow house, and even though we don't agree with them, we don't speak out, Zack said.
He was considering his own early days at Mele Magver, and thinking of his son, his poor son, caught there now.
I wonder how many in the crowd of listeners would agree with us. But no, we will never know.
because we all take the only course open to us, the road that leads away from exclusion and worse.
The road to life as a trider, Dabney agreed.
The road of self-preservation. And so we nod, perhaps laugh at their terrible mocking jokes at those others we must hate. And even though we do not believe their lies, or even though we see the cruelty in their jokes and threats and venom, we nod, or at best remain silent. Thus are we complicit. We have followed them into the ditch they are digging, grain by grain, and we become numb to it. The lies and venom become no more than words to our thoughts, mundane, no longer shocking and without meaning, but only without meaning to our conscious thoughts. For then they dig deeper, they lie louder, they hate more. And this too we accept. And now the lesser lies and venom seem reasonable by comparison. Dabney's face screwed up in confusion, and she shook her head, and Zack got the distinct impression he was losing her. It didn't matter, though. He was talking to himself and not to her at this point, as finally he began to unravel a strand of that most awful web. And so we begin to lie. And so we become complicit, he realized. And so the hole deepens around us, walls from which we cannot escape. And then the deeds. We kill for them. Maybe a goblin or a kobold or some other insignificant being, something less than, something not a person. It matters not. All that matters is that we have struck a blow in support of their deceit. And so we are more complicit still. They lie louder and they hate more, and the lies and hate and deeds that were not lesser become more so. The path is only one way, deeper. We dig beside them. We are lost in their hole. Dabney's breathing was raspy then, giving Zacnafane a strong feeling that the woman wished she had never asked the seemingly simple question in the first place.
I see it so clearly now, Zack finished. I cannot believe that I did not understand it before. Or perhaps I was too invested in not admitting my own complicity in this evilness.
He didn't miss that Dabney was leaning away from him. He stared into her eyes, shaking his head just a bit, trying to somehow signal to her that it was so plain now, and had been said aloud. And that, in and of itself, was freeing. So very freeing. You say that you wish to get back into Bregan D'Earth, Dabney said finally.
Zack just looked at her curiously.
Jarlaxle will never allow you re-entry with such words as these, spoken openly, Dabney explained. He has too much to lose. He is too close to powers that would utterly destroy anyone who dared speak such blasphemy.
This isn't about Jarlaxle, Zack replied. It is about us. We too. This is why we are here, in this place, intertwined. This is the truth, and that, in this place, is our freedom. Do you not see it?
Dabney thought on that for a long while, then meekly nodded her head, and Zack wasn't sure he believed her. He said no more, though, just rolled onto his back once more and lifted one arm over his eyes, wanting no more glowworm-incited introspection. After a while, Dabney nestled against him, and the two drifted off into slumber. They would get together many times over the next few years, but never again would Zacnafane speak of such things to Dabney. Eventually, he came to understand that he had unsettled her greatly with his declaration of truth, and as the years wore on, the visits became less frequent.
Do not do it, Dabney told Jarlaxle, surprising him.
A decade and a half, Jarlaxle said, for indeed that much time had now passed since Zacnafane's fight with the Yokel. It was a long time ago.
A long time to a goblin, a lesser time to us, a speck of time to a handmaiden, Dabney said. I know you miss him, so do I, but he is not worth it to Bregan D'Earth.
I would have thought you pleased at the news that I am considering his reinstatement.
I am, but I'm also not blind to the realities of why he isn't part of Breaking the Earth, as you seem to be. Why now?
Because his son nears the end of his decade at Melee Magver, and young Drizzt has built, by all accounts, a most magnificent reputation for himself.
Matron Malice will be willing to part with her consort, so you believe,
Dabney reasoned. She will have a lesser need for him. She'll want her son as weapon master as soon as he is able.
She'll want both as she plots her rise to the ruling council,
Dabney said bluntly. Jarlaxle shrugged. He will not be expelled from House de Werden, but he'll not be needed as much as he is now.
Do not do it, Dabney told him again. You don't understand. He is incorrigible. There is no redemption for Zachnefane in the eyes of Lolf, whether or not her handmaiden is forgiven the incident. I don't tell you this lightly, and I wish it were different. How I wish that. But Zachnefane will bring disfavor to us, of the highest order. You cannot control him, and he will never, ever accept Lolf or her edicts.
Nor does Kimoriel, and he has become an important part of our work, Darlaxle argued.
There is more to House O'Blodra than we know regarding their relationship with the Spider Queen, Dabney argued. Who can know what they really think or believe?
All we can know is that Matron Kjol Odrin sits in the third rank on the ruling council. We can safely assume that she has the blessing of Lady Lolf.
Zachnefane does not and never will, and worse, wouldn't accept it if it was offered.
Darlaxle leaned back in his seat and eyed Dabney head to toe. What is this about? A lover scorned?
Dabney laughed at that absurdity.
It is about me enjoying the quietness of my respite within Breaking the Earth, and so wanting to preserve Breaking the Earth, she answered honestly. Zachnefane has opened his heart to me, and it is not one that will accept Lolf.
The same could be said of many of my associates, Jarlaxle interrupted, but Dabney went on undeterred.
He will never accept Lolf, she repeated, nor excuse the behavior of those who do.
Go and learn for yourself if my observation is not enough for you, Jarlaxle. You survive by knowing, and this that I tell you is easy enough for a high priestess to magically discern. You know many who would do you this favor, no doubt. With that, Dabney took her leave, having said her piece, but as she departed, she was already considering where she might run if Jarlaxle did indeed allow Zachnefane back into the mercenary band. Would she betray her lover? Would she betray Jarlaxle, who had helped to spare her after the defeat of House Trayrock?
Yes, she told herself, before she had even left the Claw Rift. She hated herself for saying it, for thinking it even. But Dabney was above all else a survivor. She had to be. She understood what awaited her in the afterlife, and she was not ready to face the Demon Queen of Spiders and her court.
Not yet.